Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, friend, this is Neil Heligers, host of Adrenaline Realm's Thriller Channel, and this is False Idols, Episode 2. Enjoy.
Layla turned and slid into the back seat of the waiting Mercedes without another word to Farwadi. She felt an unexpected flare of anger at the man. He and his family and everyone at the party had been blessed with lives of privilege that she could hardly have imagined as a child. She may have grown up in Cairo, just a stone's throw from this mansion, but the world of the people she met tonight could not be further from the Cairo she knew, that her family knew. Farwadi had no idea what it was like to be a part of a truly cursed family. Layla had grown up in the Cairo slum of Manshiat Nasser, also known as Garbage City, home to a large number of Coptic Christians, including the Eldibs. They were a widely despised minority in Cairo, and often the only work they could find was collecting the city's trash, which they brought home and dumped in the streets for their families to scavenge through, looking for any discarded bits of metal or plastic they could sell to the recycling plant. Or, if they were lucky, scraps of still edible food. Layla's father had been a proud man, and had forbidden her and her two younger siblings from touching the piles of garbage. But sometimes they spotted something interesting and couldn't resist digging it out. The pervasive stench lingered in their hair and clothes. When Layla arrived at school, she would see the disgust her teacher tried to hide if she got too close. And she heard the whispered taunts of her fellow students during class. Zebelin, garbage person. But Layla still went to school, enduring their scorn every day. Even then, she knew it was the only way she'd ever get out of Garbage City. Now here she was, sitting in the back of a Mercedes, kicking off her Jimmy Choo's. Her phone buzzed, as if he had felt her thinking of their childhood. A text from her brother Rami appeared. "It's a beautiful night here. Spring is in the air. What's it like there?" He was assuming she was in New York, of course. She couldn't tell him she was really in Cairo or he'd want to see her, which was out of the question during an undercover operation. So she opened the weather app on her phone and looked at the listing for New York. The city was under an onslaught of icy rain that would run through the night. "Stormy here," wrote Layla. She waited for a few seconds, but he didn't respond. That was the extent of their communication, really, a back and forth focused primarily on the weather. It had been that way since Layla left Cairo 11 years ago. Rami had been 9 years old and obsessed with weather. She found it hard to imagine him now, as a young man in his second year of university. Tuition was free for Egyptian citizens, but textbooks and living expenses weren't. So Layla sent him money when she could. She didn't want him to be the poorest kid in class anymore, to be shackled to his childhood in Manshiat Nasser. She knew she was miles from the slums of Garbage City, but she imagined she could still smell the relentless stench. Her mother and her sister Sena still lived there. She pressed her palm against the window, wondering what it might be like to see them or Rami again. Tears stung her eyes as she remembered Farwadi's words. "A curse on my family." She leaned forward and told the driver, "I don't want to go home yet. Take me to El Higaz Street." It was the main drag of a trendy neighborhood, full of bars and restaurants that would be open late. He nodded and changed direction, but they'd only gone a few blocks when the car slowed to a stop. "What is it?" she asked.
"Police checkpoint."
Layla's heart automatically skipped a beat.
Did something happen?
Her mind jumped to the possibility of a terror attack.
"Not that I know of."
He sounded more irritated than alarmed.
"There were some student protests in support of Farid Mansour last week, and the government wants to make sure there aren't any more."
She'd been reading about Mansour. He was the leader of the Open Society Party, which pledged to expose human rights abuses by the current government and put an end to censorship. With parliamentary elections less than a year away, the party was rapidly gaining support. They reached the checkpoint. She dug out her passport and gave it to the officer. She couldn't tell if his uniform was police or military. The difference between them seemed to be narrowing these days. No wonder Mansour's message was resonating. The driver handed over his passport as well. Layla resisted the urge to smile and make nice with the man who currently controlled her fate. Child of privilege Layla Noir wouldn't bother. She put on a vaguely bored expression as the officer briefly examined both passports, then tossed them back to their owners and waved the car on. Layla asked the driver to stop in front of a bar on El Higaz Street.
"I don't need you to wait for me. I'll get a taxi home."
"Are you sure? A woman alone at night?"
She leaned forward and handed the man a substantial tip. "I'm sure." The bar was packed with customers. Layla pushed her way through them to the ladies' room at the back and ducked into a stall. She opened her huge purse and pulled out a gray, long-sleeved cardigan, which she put on over her party dress. Then she took out a black hijab and put that on as well. Layla emerged and checked herself in the mirror. She was satisfied that anyone who might have seen her going into the club wouldn't recognize the same woman coming out. As an added precaution, she slipped out the nearest back door. She followed the alley behind the building to the nearest street and hailed a cab.
65 El Felahi, please.
It was past 1 a.m. when Layla let herself into the modest two-bedroom apartment. The lights were on, and Special Agent Ellen Pierce was still awake, waiting for her. The apartment was, officially, an FBI safe house. Pierce was living there while using it as a makeshift field office for the undercover op. "The party went well," Layla told her. "Farwadi did exactly what we needed him to do." Pierce smiled.
"So who did you meet?"
Layla approached a large whiteboard hanging on the wall of the living room. It was covered with pictures of the collectors and dealers they were investigating, linked with different colors of thread, mapping out the complex web of personal and professional relationships between them.
"I talked to Miriam Goldman briefly," she said, using a dry erase marker to put a check mark beside the woman's picture. "And Noor Ghaffar, also briefly." Another check. She knew this didn't sound very impressive, so she added, "I also connected with their children, Marcus and Adrian Goldman." She wrote the names next to their mother's picture. "Jehan Ghaffar. I'm invited to half a dozen house parties in the next month." She'd wait to bring up the issue of airfare. "The best part is, the kids probably have no idea what their parents are hiding. They'll hardly notice if I disappear in the middle of a party to go search the house."
"Hell, they'll probably show you where Mom hides all the good stuff if you ask."
Pierce grinned and surveyed the board again. She was whippet thin and intense, with a kind of nervous energy radiating off her.
"You want a drink?"
Pierce asked, tearing her gaze from the board.
Sure. I think I've got wine. Let's see.
She padded to the kitchen, calling back to Layla.
How's it feel?
How's what feel?
Being undercover.
Layla considered this.
It's weird.
Kinda surreal.
It feels almost like make-believe or play-acting.
I like it.
Pierce returned and handed her a glass of red wine. She tapped her own glass against Layla's. Layla gratefully sipped the wine. She'd been so immersed undercover that she had forgotten how anxious she felt. Anxiety had become part of her, along with the constant fear of being caught out. But the Layla reflected back at her in the glass looked confident. She saw that Pierce was studying her too.
Be careful, Layla.
I'm careful. I know the procedures.
I'm not talking about procedures. I'm talking about the slippery slope going undercover can put you on.
Burnout?
No, not burnout, exactly. It's more like inside out.
Pierce took a long, thirsty pull on her glass and stepped away from the window.
You get so tuned into your cover, the play acting, and the next thing you know, you're not playing anymore. You're in it, and it is you.
I don't think that will happen here. I can hardly even identify with these people. They travel, they shop, they go to parties. Their lives are totally free and pointless.
Layla turned. Pierce was seated on the chair next to the evidence board, cradling her glass in her hands and looking at the floor between her feet.
You think it's different in any other situation? Narcotics, racketeering, organized crime? Agents walk in thinking they're going to be surrounded by bad guys, that they'll always be able to tell the difference. But when you're under, you're under. You start to realize you're surrounded by people, flesh and blood. Things can get fuzzy. You can lose perspective.
Did that happen to you?
Pierce leaned back and stared at the ceiling. She was so thin, all sharp angles and lines.
Maybe. I guess, yeah. If losing perspective means losing everything. Sometimes you go hunting for something and you lose sight of what you're really looking for.
4 weeks ago. Layla sat in the passenger seat as Pierce inched the black Ford Taurus through the dense traffic of West 24th Street, on their way from the raid at the harbor to Nassim Farwadi's Manhattan Gallery.
Do you get back to Cairo very often?
Pierce asked. Layla forced a rueful smile.
Not as often as I'd like.
Translation, not once since she'd walked out of her family's tiny apartment half a lifetime ago, vowing never to set foot in Cairo again. But the older woman could see the struggle behind her facade.
I've spent a lot of time in Egypt, she said. Worked out of the American Embassy in Cairo for almost a year. I like it. But it couldn't have been an easy place for a girl, especially a smart girl, to grow up.
This understanding took Layla by surprise. She answered honestly.
No, it wasn't. Most of the girls in my class dropped out before we graduated to get married.
Pierce regarded her with increasing respect.
And you went off to college in the States. Let me guess. Princeton, Harvard?
Georgetown.
Your family must be really proud, said the senior agent.
Layla simply nodded. She didn't want to get into the ugly truth about the endless screaming fights she'd had with her parents. Her father had considered school a waste of time for a girl and started pressuring her to drop out when she was 15. Don't be so selfish, he told her at least once a week, as she returned from school. You have a duty to your family. But Layla had dreamed of going to college, preferably somewhere far away. She had worked on her applications in the school's meager library and scraped together the money for postage. The day she'd received her acceptance letter from Georgetown, along with notification of her full scholarship in linguistics, had been the proudest of her life. It had also been the day she'd walked away from the only home she'd ever known, determined never to return.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Layla broke the silence by getting back to the matter at hand.
So, how did Farawadi end up on your radar?
I was investigating some questionable acquisitions at the Met. He was never a suspect, but he knew all the major players in the art world. All of the high-end dealers and collectors go to the same fundraisers and big gallery openings.
She waved a hand to indicate the trendy art galleries on both sides of the street.
From the outside, they just looked like office buildings, with no hint of the pricey paintings and sculptures inside. At least, that's what Layla assumed was in there. She'd never actually set foot in this part of Chelsea, much less gone inside the galleries. They'd probably charge her a fee just to breathe the rarefied air.
Pierce honked at a jaguar trying to cut in front of her. "You wouldn't believe these people," she went on. "Penthouses in Manhattan, villas in Florence, private jets. It's like one big international country club with the super rich buying and selling million-dollar pieces over a round of golf or sailboat regatta or whatever."
"Not really my zine," said Layla.
She was currently sharing a small apartment in Long Island City, an hour's train ride from the FBI field office, with two annoying roommates. And that was a step up from the rat hole she'd lived in when she first moved to New York 6 years ago. Pierce went on. "The problem is that most of their business is perfectly legit, which makes it tough to spot the illegal sales. I need someone with inside knowledge, like Farwadi, to help me figure out how the underground antiquities market works, and who's involved."
Layla nodded. "And now that you have some leverage,
you'll be much more inclined to cooperate." Pierce pulled the car into a parking spot in front of the Farwadi Gallery and put an FBI placard on the dashboard to forestall getting towed. "Of course, if we threaten him with charges right away, he'll clam up and call his lawyer. We need to ease into it. Make him think he can talk his way out of trouble."
"Outsmart the silly police."
"Exactly." They left their FBI windbreakers in the car and went into the gallery. It was, Layla had to admit, impressive. An open two-story space with white walls that curved seamlessly around the room, illuminated by an enormous, frosted glass globe that hung from the ceiling by a single chain. Half a dozen people were perusing the work of contemporary Middle Eastern artists, from bronze sculptures to brightly colored abstract paintings. "This is all the legal merchandise," said Pierce, as she peered at a distorted portrait in orange and magenta. "The illegal stuff changes hands in private." They spotted Farwadi talking to an older Asian couple in front of a large desert landscape. He glanced over at the two women as they entered, in their off-the-rack clothes and utilitarian shoes, and swiftly dismissed them as unlikely customers. He continued his sales pitch as Pierce approached.
"The desolate beauty of this landscape conveys about the grief and endurance of the people in the artist's homeland."
His pompous tone reminded Layla of a teacher she'd had in secondary school. When he paused to draw breath, Pierce asked, "Mr. Farwadi, can we speak with you?" Without the slightest acknowledgement, he turned away from her, leading the older couple toward a painting of white birds in flight against a red sky.
"This piece was featured in a show at the prestigious Rampa Gallery in Istanbul."
Layla saw the other woman's jaw tighten. Pierce pulled out her badge and showed it subtly.
"FBI, Mr. Farwadi, we need to ask you some questions."
Layla saw a flash of panic cross Farwadi's face before it flushed a deep red. He nodded, struggling to maintain his composure.
Please, join me in my office."
He started toward a door in the back, gesturing for them to follow. Pierce didn't budge.
"That's all right. This shouldn't take too long," she told him, her voice echoing through the open space.
Layla stifled a smile. Farwadi straightened to his full height, but still had to look up at the taller woman.
"What can I do for you, Agent?"
She lowered her volume a notch. "Pierce," she told him, then nodded to Layla in flanking position to his left.
"This is Agent Eldeeb. We're investigating a shipment of art and antiquities that arrived in New York Harbor this morning, on its way to your gallery."
Layla saw him tense up. He knew exactly what was in that shipment. She smiled sweetly and gave the man an out.
"We think that someone at the port in Mozambique slipped some illegal goods into the cargo container with your merchandise."
He tried to cover his relief at her dumb explanation with a frown of concern.
"That's terrible.
What kind of goods? Drugs?
Stolen antiquities, said Pierce.
Mixed right in with yours.
We could really use your help to sort everything out, Layla added. She lowered her gaze and forced herself to sound deferential.
That is, if you can spare the time.
He puffed up in response.
Certainly. Let me just tell my staff.
As he went to the back office, the women exchanged a quick smile. The good cop, bad cop routine couldn't have gone better if they'd scripted it. Farawadi returned, and they escorted him out to the car. Pierce opened the door for their suspect. Sounding bored, she began to recite,
"You have the right to remain silent."
He reacted with alarm, his eyes darting to Layla for help. She simpered and reassured him,
"It doesn't mean you're under arrest. Agent Pierce is just following procedure."
Agent Pierce was, in fact, covering their asses, making sure that anything Farwadi might say in the car would eventually be admissible in court, if the case even went to court. Layla had seen enough good testimony get thrown out for stupid reasons to appreciate the senior agent's caution. Back at 26 Federal Plaza, the agents flashed their credentials at the main desk. Farwadi emptied his pockets into a plastic bin and stepped through the metal detector. When he tried to retrieve his belongings, Pierce held them back.
"We'll just keep those for you up front," she said.
Then she added with a small laugh,
"Don't worry. Nobody's going to search your phone."
Only because she doesn't have a warrant, thought Layla. At least, not yet.
The gallery owner seemed to grow more nervous as they escorted him into the main office, across the large FBI emblem inlaid in the tile floor, past rows of desks where agents and administrative staff were working. Pierce opened the door to the more comfortable of two interrogation rooms. The chairs were padded, if a bit threadbare, and not bolted to the floor. She pulled one over to the rectangular table.
"Have a seat. We'll get the pictures of those antiquities," said Pierce.
She and Layla left Farwadi glancing nervously at the mirrored section of the wall, which anyone who had ever seen a cop show would know must be one-way glass. Outside the door, they nearly collided with Tom Monahan.
"Ellen," he said jovially. "Thanks for bringing him in."
She stared at him.
"What?"
The big agent gestured toward the interrogation room.
"Farwadi, the Muharib's money man."
"He's not... What the hell are you talking about?"
"Farwadi's name is on the manifest for that shipping container. I checked."
Monahan grinned. He was enjoying himself.
"It's like you said. You can get a lot of money for those little green vases. And that means a lot of Kalashnikovs for the Muharib."
He shot a look at Layla. Pierce collected herself and spoke calmly.
"You know there's more to it than that. The money passes through a lot of different hands."
He was shaking his head.
"Tell you what, I'll let Farwadi explain it to me."
He started to move around her toward the interrogation room door, but she stayed in his way.
"Forget it. This is my interview and my case."
They stood there for a moment, face to face. Pierce was nearly his height, but Monahan had more bulk. He leaned in close.
"You made your case part of a joint operation. Specifically, a joint terrorism task force operation. Which puts you on my turf, sweetheart. I'll handle it from here."
She opened her mouth to object, then closed it again. As the ASAC of counterterrorism, he outranked her in the JTTF hierarchy. Pierce stepped aside. Monahan smiled. He gestured toward the door of the observation room.
"You're welcome to watch me interrogate the suspect if you like."
Then he went into the interrogation room and closed the door.
Layla watched Pierce's jaw work as she fought to hold back her frustration. Without a word, the senior agent stepped into the observation room. Layla followed. It was a long, narrow space that might have been a supply closet at some point, barely large enough for two people to sit at a low table and look into the interview room through the glass. Monahan was flipping through a case file. Through a speaker on the wall, they heard him say,
"Mr. Farwadi, I'm Special Agent Monahan."
"What happened to—"
"The lovely Agent Pierce? Called away on another case. You'll be dealing with me from now on."
He paged through the file.
"Tell me about the Muharib."
Farwadi stared at him.
"What?"
he managed.
"You know, the people you were gonna sell those pretty little trinkets for." "That's not true."
The big agent leaned closer.
"Work with me here, Nassim. This is your one and only chance to get ahead of this mess."
Pierce approached the one-way glass, talking to Monahan even though she knew he couldn't hear. "That's good. Now start with the easy stuff."
"So, back to the Muharib,"
he said, pleasantly enough. "Shit," she muttered under her breath. Sweat appeared on Farwadi's forehead.
"I don't know anything about the Muharib. We know they're planning something in the U.S.
"I swear to you, I don't, Nassim."
Monahan stood, looming over the smaller man.
"We're not gonna get along if you lie to me."
Farwadi faced him for a long moment, then looked away.
"I don't think I should say anything else without consulting my attorney."
The agent backed off.
"Okay, if that's the way you want to play this."
He went out into the main office. Pierce snapped off the loudspeaker in frustration.
"Farwadi doesn't know anything about the Muharib."
"How can you be so sure?"
"I know this guy. I've been studying him for a year and a half."
She began to pace the cramped room.
"And I know how the illegal antiquities market works. There's a long chain of suppliers and middlemen between the poor guy who digs up the treasure and the rich asshole who ends up putting it on his mantelpiece. Everyone in the chain knows the links on either side of them, but not beyond that."
Pierce scanned the room for visual aids. She found a pen on the floor and pulled a folded FBI memo from her back pocket. She smoothed out the paper on the narrow table, blank side up.
"On one end, you have a group, like the Muharib," she began, and drew an elongated circle to represent the first link. "They're sitting in a sandbox full of ancient relics that they want to turn into cash. So they hire some local guys to dig up an illegal site or go ransack a museum."
She drew a second link beside the first, overlapping at one end. Through the glass, Layla saw Monahan bring in a cell phone and toss it at Farwadi. She focused her attention back on Pierce.
"The hired guys get their hands on something valuable, well, maybe a ritual amphora from the Temple of Horus. They take it to a local dealer they trust."
She sketched a third circle, representing the dealer.
"He buys it from them, no questions asked, for maybe a couple $100. Doesn't sound like much, I know, but if they sell enough pieces, it adds up. The money goes through them, back to the Muharib."
She drew a line through the second link, back to the first.
"So this dealer doesn't know who he's really bankrolling."
"Although he must have a pretty good idea," said Layla.
"Of course he does, but he doesn't say that when he passes along the amphora to someone else to smuggle out of the country."
Pierce put a fourth circle beside the third, their ends overlapping.
"The smuggler sells it to another dealer, who sells it to another one, then to another," she said, running a squiggly line all over the page. "Everybody jacks up the price enough to make a profit, and the original provenance of the amphora gets lost along the way."
She ended the squiggle in a fifth circle connected to the fourth.
it finally ends up getting stashed in a shipping container full of otherwise legitimate cargo on its way to a ritzy art gallery. The gallery owner, she nodded toward the interrogation room, makes up whatever story he likes about the fascinating history of the item and sells it for $500,000 to some clueless rich guy who puts it on display in the foyer of his penthouse and shows it off to his friends. Her pen dug into the paper as she outlined the last circle, then jabbed it again for emphasis. They both looked at Farawadi through the one-way glass. He was talking on the phone, presumably to his lawyer, his face damp with sweat. Layla glanced at Pierce, reluctant to make what seemed like an obvious suggestion.
"I know you've been trying to put this guy in jail for a while,
but I should cut a deal with him for information," she finished with a resigned nod. "Yeah, I know." Layla followed her out of the observation room and into the main office, where Monahan was pacing like a hungry lion by the interrogation room door. Pierce approached him. "So much for the intimidation approach." He turned on her as if he might actually sink his teeth into her throat.
"I suppose you want to offer him a deal."
"Unless you want to try waterboarding him for a while," she said. Layla struggled to keep a straight face. "But he still won't be able to introduce you to the Muharib."
"I know that," he snapped. "I'm trying to choke off their cash flow."
"So am I." They glared in furious agreement. In the tense silence, Layla spoke up, her voice perfectly calm. "Then use him as an informant and destroy the whole fucking network from the top down."
False Idols is written by Lisa Klink, Patrick Lawyer, and Diana Wren. Performed by Lauren Ezzo. Produced by Amanda Rose Smith. FBI advisor Robert K. Whitman. Theme music by Amanda Rose Smith. You're listening to Adrenaline False Idols, created and produced by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of supernatural horror, missing for nearly 6 months now.
"That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
"Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast."
"There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other."
"I need you to find me."
"To save yourself."
"Of course.
What else would it be?"
The Sheridans, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Adrenaline is produced by Nicole Kreuter and Kaylin West. Associate produced by Devin Shepard. Executive produced by Molly Barton and Julian Yap. Hosted by Neil Heligers. Audio editing by Kaylin West. Original theme by Marcus Bagala. Original cover art by Kendall Thomas. Find more shows like this on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.